So I want to kick things off with something funny that happened the other day. I popped into this cafe near my place, right? And it was like super accessible. Ramps everywhere, menus in braille, even a quiet section for people with sensory issues. Honestly, it was so impressive. It made me think about how much of a difference proper accessibility makes, you know?
Absolutely. And places like that really showcase the spirit of the Equality Act 2010. The entire point of it is to ensure no one is left out, disability or otherwise. It's about consolidating all those previous anti-discrimination laws and making them coherent and, well, enforceable.
Right, and it covers so much like employment, education, public spaces, basically any area where there's potential for unfair treatment. And isn't it true that employers and service providers have to make what they call reasonable adjustments? I just love that term. It's like, just adjust people. It's not that hard.
Exactly. And the key is reasonable, right? The law calls for adjustments that are practical but impactful. So adding a ramp, providing subtitles, allowing flexible schedules for employees with certain conditions. These aren't monumental changes, but they can be life-changing for someone who needs them.
Yeah, and you know, the cafe reminded me of that. It wasn't doing anything extravagant, like they didn't fly in architectural geniuses to redesign the place. But what they had was thoughtful, deliberate inclusivity.
And that thoughtfulness is exactly what the Equality Act aims to legalise. It defines disability quite specifically, a physical or mental impairment that has a substantial and long-term adverse effect on daily activities. So it not only protects against active discrimination, but also promotes proactive accommodation.
Wow, proactive accommodation. That should be a bumper sticker or a life mantra.
Perhaps both. But jokes aside, the Act's a lifeline for many, though compliance isn't always perfect. That's why it's vital to keep pushing awareness and ensuring that this isn't just legislation. It's a cultural standard.
You know, thinking about proactive accommodation makes me wonder, when it comes to education, doesn't inclusive education just sound like this big, ambitious thing? Like, it's such an important goal, but also kind of overwhelming at the same time.
They do carry a lot of weight, but I think they're meant to. Inclusive education is about opening doors and breaking down barriers, isn't it?
Totally. And that's where organisations like ALLFE come in, right? They're all about mainstream inclusion, pushing for laws, creating resources. Honestly, without groups like them, a lot of schools wouldn't know where to start.
Absolutely. ALLFE's work really zeroes in on making inclusion practical, not just a buzzword. They've been instrumental in advocating for legislative changes and providing the tools schools need to be genuinely inclusive. And their commitment ties directly into the UNCRPD, which encourages countries like the UK to focus on inclusive education systems.
Yeah, it's like this guiding star for making sure everyone, not just some people, but like everyone, gets access to the same opportunities, right?
Exactly. And I visited this school a while back that's done a phenomenal job of embracing that concept. They've entirely transformed their curriculum. Every classroom is accessible. Every lesson plan is designed with all students in mind. It wasn't about ticking boxes. It was about truly believing in their students' potential.
Wait, so what did that look like in practice?
Well, one example was how they redesigned their science program. Instead of focusing solely on reading heavy materials, they brought in hands-on experiments that allowed everyone, including those with visual impairments, to participate. And the faculty made adaptability a core value. If a lesson didn't work, they reworked it.
That's amazing. Like, imagine what it'd be like if every school thought that way.
It'd be transformational. Creating an environment where all children feel seen and capable changes not only the students, but the culture of the entire school.
And that's it right there, isn't it? It's culture change we're talking about, not just policies or ramps in doorways. Okay, so speaking of systems that either lift people up or hold them back, welfare cuts. Sounds terrifying already, right?
It does. And for a very good reason. These cuts, especially in areas tied to disability benefits, can have profound ripple effects. For instance, the personal independence payments, or PIP, being reduced has raised alarms about how it could push vulnerable individuals into even tougher circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And critics aren't exactly holding back here. They're saying it's not just about the individuals affected, though honestly, that's bad enough. It's the knock-on effects, like pressure on the NHS. Less support means more people needing emergency care, and suddenly it's a whole crisis, you know?
Exactly, and it's a delicate balancing act, isn't it? The government argues that these cuts are necessary for fiscal responsibility, to redirect funds or reduce spending. But the question remains, at what cost? Because when you're cutting disability benefits, you're targeting individuals who frequently rely on these resources to maintain a basic standard of living.
Right, like we're talking essentials here. Mobility aids, accessible housing, even just stuff like being able to get out of the house to go to work, assuming they're even able to have a job. It's not luxury spending.
Precisely. And this, you know, this approach sometimes feels like it's prioritizing immediate savings over long-term solutions. Because if disabled individuals lose support, they may end up needing more costly interventions later, as critics have pointed out.
And let's be real for a sec. Forcing people back into work sounds good in theory, but not everyone can just snap their fingers and suddenly be employable. If the system isn't set up to support them properly, how can they even start?
That's it. I think what's often overlooked is this concept of social support as an investment, not just an expense. When you provide adequate resources, you're empowering individuals to contribute to society in their own meaningful ways, whether through work, community engagement, or simply living dignified, independent lives.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be an all or nothing situation, right? Like, we can be fiscally responsible without stripping away essential lifelines. Honestly, it kind of feels like we're missing the middle ground here.
It does. And I think that's where advocacy becomes so critical. The voices pushing back against these cuts are the ones reminding everyone that there's a human story behind every number on a budget sheet. It's not just statistics, it's people's lives.
Exactly. And I mean, we've talked about the power of inclusivity and accessibility in earlier chapters. This is the same conversation, just on a bigger scale. If we can get it right here, imagine the kind of society we'd build.
A society that values all its members equally and ensures no one is left behind. I think that's a vision we can all aspire to, don't you?
Oh, 100%. And on that note, I reckon we've given everyone plenty to think about today.
Indeed, we have. Thanks for joining us on this vital conversation.
We'll catch you next time. Stay radical, everyone.